is this parsha, and this is a very special parsha. This is the brachat, the blessings of the house of Israel, the Ephraim and Manasseh, and the whole house of Israel. This parsha speaks prophecy. It's a very good parsha. The opening verse: Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. This was the same amount of years that Joseph was with Jacob when he was young. And they were the days of Jacob, the years of his life, 7 years and 40 and 100 years. Then I'm going to read it off his Torah scroll. This Torah scroll is very amazing. The scribes are called a sofer. Sofer. Not a shofar, a sofer. And they're trained in the Torah very, very extensively. And this parsha is hidden. It's the only parsha, and I'll leave this up for afterwards so you can come and see what I mean. At the beginning of every portion in the Torah scrolls, they always have a little space between where the last portion ended and the new portion starts. And it could either be on the top of the page where it begins, or in the middle of the column, or down towards the end. But there's always a little gap. There's always a little gap. But this parsha, the very last parsha of Bereshit, is hidden. I had to read, go through and read in the literally line for line to find it. And I found it. Boom, right in the middle. And later on, you can come up and look and see. It was hidden. And I thought, last night, I'm thinking, why was that hidden? Why was it hidden? Hidden. Ephraim Manasseh, hidden in the nations. The scribes know this, and that's why this was their silent language. They hid this last parsha because it's accentuating the fact that Ephraim Manasseh got firstborn status. They got Reuben's spot, which was the highest you could go in the family, and it's also the burden that goes with it is with Isaac and Jacob. Ishmael was older, Isaac was younger. Esau was older, Jacob was younger. And so now we see, as we go through this, we'll see why this is hidden. Because Ephraim and Manasseh are hidden in the nations. Vayichi, where are you again? There it is. Vayichi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim. Shiva esre shana vayichi yame Yaakov. Shane chayav shiva shanim ve'arbaim umat shana. That's the Hebrew for what I just read there in the English. Shana shanim, 17 years in Egypt, in Mitzrayim. Vayechi, and he lived. We're going to see some things today that are very, it's really good. And the English, when they translated it, they once again didn't let it go through. They didn't let it go through, a couple things. And we could start off, Abba, in the name of Yeshua, come forth today with your word and present your intentions to us in the prophecies and the things that we can apply to our lives today. Help us to see the forgiveness of Yosef. Help us to take the forgiveness of Yosef and put it inside us. Give us that strength that we can forgive as Yosef did. Abba, this is a major lesson, the most major lesson in Bereshit. Thank you for bringing this to our faces. In Yahshua's name, amen. The blessings. Genesis 47, 28 through 48, 22. And thank you, Paul, for reading. And thank you, guys, up there.
And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the length of Jacob's life was 147 years. When the time drew near that Israel must die, he called his son Yosef and said to him, "Now if I have found favor in your sight, please put your hand under my thigh and deal kindly and truly with me. Please do not bury me in Egypt, but let me lie with my fathers. You shall carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burial place." And he said, "I will do as you have said." Then he said, "Swear to me," and he swore to him. So Israel bowed himself on the head of the bed. Now it came to pass after these things that Yosef was told, indeed your father is sick. And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And Yaakov was told, look, your son Yosef is coming to you. And Israel strengthened himself and sat up on the bed. Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me and said to me, behold, I will make you a fruitful and multiply you, and I will make of you a multitude of people, and give this land to your descendants after you as an everlasting possession. And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. Your offspring, whom you shall beget after them, shall be yours. It will be called by the name of their brothers and their inheritance. But as for me, when I came from Padan, Rachel died beside me in the land of Canaan on the way, when there was but a little distance to go to Ephrath. And I buried her there on the way to Ephrath, that is, Bethlehem. Then Israel saw Joseph's sons and said, who are these? Joseph said to his father, they are my sons whom God has given me in this place. And he said, please bring them to me, and I will bless them. Now the eyes of Israel were dim with age, so that he could not see. Then Yosef brought them near him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said to Joseph, I had not thought to see your face, but in fact God has also shown me your offspring. So Yosef brought them from beside his knees, and he bowed down with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim with his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh with his left hand toward Israel's right hand. And he brought them near him. Then Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, guiding his hands knowingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Yosef, saying, God before whom my fathers Abraham and Yitzhak walked, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. Let my name be named upon them, and let the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. Now when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand on the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. So he took his hold of his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. And Joseph said to his father, not so, my father, for this one is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head. But his father refused and said, I know, my son, I know. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations. So he blessed them that day, saying, by you Israel will bless, saying, may God make you as Ephraim and as Manasseh. And thus he set Ephraim before Manasseh. Then Israel said to Joseph, behold, I am dying, but God will be with you and bring you back to the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given to you one portion above your brothers, which I took from the land of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow.
Let's go to Genesis 48:4.
And said to me, behold, I will make you a fruitful and multiply you, and I will make you a multitude of people, and give this land to your descendants after you as an everlasting possession.
Okay, this is in the English, it says, and I will make of you a multitude of people. A multitude of people. Can we scroll this side up a little bit on this verse? Go. And I will make you, or I will give you, I will make you into an assembly, a company. That word right there is kahal, congregation. So you could take on there and you can double click on that word right there with your mouse. Kahal, assembly, convocation, congregation, army, assembly. Congregation, this word, it's most prolifically used in insinuating a congregation. And he's saying that it's going to be a people walking in order, in God's order, is what he's talking about here. He says in 48:4, he says, behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will make of you, a congregation of people. A people who are going to be of you, I will make a people that are going to be of me, of God. A multitude. And so when we look at this, why, I want to ask, did they take that right there and not translate it correctly? Why didn't they do it? That's always the question in my head. How come these guys, they knew enough to know, do not use the word congregation, because then everybody's going to turn Jewish on us. And that's what they were thinking in Europe when this was being translated. They wanted it to be under the Vatican. So, let's just say a multitude of people. They'll never know what the Hebrew means. They won't be interested in it. After all, we're teaching them that the Jewish people are wrong anyway. So they won't even go there and check it out. But that's what it says. I will make of you a congregation of people, a people that will walk in my order. This is what he's talking about when he's blessing them. When a man, this was a man of God. Jacob, everybody agrees Jacob was of God, right? He was called out by God. He's blessing his children in accordance to God. He wouldn't be saying, there's just going to be a lot of you. He wouldn't just say that in blessing. He wouldn't stop and say, now I'm going to bless you and say, there's just going to be a lot of you. That's not what they were thinking then. When they blessed someone, they spoke spiritual life into the lives of people. To assemble, to gather a congregation, kahal, ever since Mashiach Yeshua came and became our high priest, he has been regathering and restoring and assembling the scattered lost sheep of the house of Israel out of the nations where he hid their bloodlines. That's why that parsha did not have a space in front of it, why it was hidden. So anybody that doesn't know Hebrew could never find it. They could never find it. Yeshua has come for the restoration of the house of Israel. And that is his whole drive. He will scatter us to the nation for disobedience, from Deuteronomy 4:27.
And the Lord will scatter you among the peoples, and you will be left few in number among the nations where the Lord will drive you.
And Deuteronomy 28:64.
Then the Lord will scatter you among all peoples from one end of the earth to the other. And there you shall serve other gods, which neither you nor your fathers have known, wood and stone.
Wood and stone. Man-made idols. Graven images. God said he would scatter for disobedience, and it happened. We have the two dates when it happened. 722 BC, the northern kingdom, and 586 BC, the southern kingdom. And then he's bringing us back. People were scattered. The people, house of Israel, scattered all over the globe. They migrated everywhere. And now he's bringing us back. Deuteronomy 30, verse 3.
But the Lord your God will bring you back from captivity and have compassion on you and gather you again from all the nations where the Lord your God has scattered you.
Now, I don't know about you people, but when God pulled me into his ways, I felt like I was brought out of captivity. I literally felt like I was free from the bondage of man, from the ways of man. Well, everybody's doing it. Well, yeah, that's what they were saying in Egypt when they were smacking out adobes. Everybody's doing it. Just accept it. We're slaves. Yeah. Matthew 15:24.
But he answered and said, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel.
And Matthew 18:11.
For the Son of Man has come to save that which was lost.
That which was lost. And Yeshua knows the bloodlines. He knows the hearts of men. He knows what kind of life flows in each and every one of our veins. Nehemiah 1:8.
Remember, I pray, the word that you commanded your servant Moshe, saying, if you were unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations.
If we are unfaithful, he will scatter us among the nations. Today, this applies to our spiritual aspect also. If we are not following Elohim in emunah, in faith, in action, then we are following the ways of the nations. Is this not true? Because the way I look at it, anything other than God is of the world. So, if we're not following Elohim in faith, then we are following the ways of the nations. No ifs, ands, or buts. Whether we think we're following or whether we think we're sitting still, we're following something. It's either idleness or it's some false religion or some false way. Genesis 48:5.
And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born to you in the land of Egypt, before I came to you in Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine.
They will be mine, as Reuben and as Simeon. Reuben was his firstborn. Ephraim and Manasseh are elevated from grandsons to equal status as sons, and then firstborn status. And they will be called Israelites, Genesis 48:6.
Your offspring, whom you beget after them, shall be yours. They will be called by the name of their brothers in their inheritance.
They will be called by the name of their brothers, which was Israel, in their inheritance. This is speaking into generations. They will be called this. They will be called by the name God gave their father. Remember, always remember too, because there's a big push out there right now that this is some sort of a fictitional feel-good book, but it's actually a historical document. The scriptures are a historical accurate document. They've proved it all with other records. They've proved it all with cuneiform tablets that were written, letters that were written in clay, letters that were written in lead. They've found too much out there. And the more they find, the madder Palestine gets. And so always remember, the first temple was completed right around 960 BC. Okay? Solomon's temple. 30 years later, the kingdom divided. Right around 930 BC. The northern kingdom is variously called Samaria, after its capital, and is also called Ephraim, after its dominant tribe. It was the most dominant. Why was it dominant? Because of the blessing. He said, I would make a bunch of you, and you'd be a multitude. A big multitude. In 722 BC, the Assyrian dispersion of Ephraim, which is the northern kingdom. In 586 BC, Babylonian dispersion of Judah, the southern kingdom. Judah, Levi, and part of Benjamin. And then in Genesis 48:16.
The angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. Let my name be named upon them in the name of my fathers, Abraham and Yitzhak, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth.
In the Hebrew, it says, Vaydegu, Larov, Becherev Haaretz, is what that says. And what we find in the Hebrew, and they may multiply in the midst as far as a multitude in the land of the earth. Okay, click on that word right there. Double click. May they grow into a teeming multitude of fish, dag. You see that? Dalet and Gemal, with two kamatzes and a chai. Vayidagu, Vayidagu larov bekerev haaretz, in the land. Vayidagu, key word, fish. Vayidagu larov. Some of you have heard this teaching before, but for those who haven't, that's what this is for today, part of this. In Genesis 48:16, it states, may the angel who redeemed me from all evil bless the lads, and my name be declared upon them in the names of my forefathers, Isaac and Abraham, Isaac, and may they proliferate abundantly like fish within the land. In the Chumash, it literally says it in their wording right here in 48:16. They also, they say right here in the what we talked about in congregation, it actually says, I will make you numerous, I will make you into a congregation of nations. A congregation. Very important. This fish, teeming multitudes of fish. I don't know if many of you, some of you have been in the ocean, you've seen big schools of fish, and they're in harmony. You know how they move? They all move like one big creature. They make up many parts of that one, and that's their defense, to look bigger than what's coming after them. And it's really neat when you start looking at all the aspects of what God created, and you start looking into His Word, and you see this starting to get exposed. Let them grow into a multitude of fish in the midst of the earth. Jacob declared these words to Ephraim right after he switched the hands, blessing Ephraim with his right hand and Manasseh with his left hand. When Yosef saw this, he tried to stop his father, where Yaakov answered, "Yet his younger brother shall become greater than he, and his offspring will fill the nations." Fullness of the nations. 48:19. Let's look at this. 48:19.
But his father refused and said, "I know, my son, I know. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations."
Can we scroll this side up? People. Great. Where was it? There it is. Greater. Keep going. Keep going. Okay, right here. Fullness of the nations. He says the descendants shall become a multitude of nations. But the fullness of the nation they're talking about here is in your seed, every nation shall be blessed. Remember the promise to Abraham? Now he's pushing it on. He's speaking again into the generations. That you, your children's, 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 children's will become the fullness of the nations. They will be the strength, the backbone, the heart of the nations. And this is another reason why the Jewish people were persecuted for so many years. Because they were successful. They had their lives in order. They knew who God is. And they worked and they were very wise, very smart, given discernment, became doctors and lawyers. And the whole time they get accused of swindling people. They find some way to attack the Jewish people, the people of God, because they were left in charge of the Torah. And it speaks of this in this blessing too with the Yehuda. The fullness of the nations. You will be like teeming fish, schools of fish in Matthew 4:18 through 20.
And Yeshua, walking by the Sea of Galilee, saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and Andrew his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. Then he said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." They immediately left their nets and followed him.
Because they recognized the prophecy and what he was saying. They knew that this was written in their Torah. They had read this in the Hebrew. They didn't know English. English wasn't spoken in the land at this time. Thank God. The Hebrew was alive with prophecy, and these guys knew it. They immediately left their nets and followed him. They recognized the prophecy. Yeshua was referring to those that the blessing was recited upon. His disciples knew this. He knew. The Jewish people have always known. The Mashiach comes, he's coming with a net. The net is the word of God. The Torah correctly intended and understood. And this is what he's going to catch the teeming multitude back in. And he catches them and he uses their DNA to catch them. The word and the DNA. Believe me, when I was 40 years ago, 30 years ago, I was not thinking about this. He used the net on me. Yeshua was referring to those that the blessing was decided upon. And his disciples knew this. And again, he showed them in John 21:1-6.
After these things, Yeshua showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. And in this way, he showed himself. Simon Peter, Thomas, called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, "I'm going fishing." They said to him, "We are going with you also." They went out and immediately got into the boat, and that night they caught nothing. But when the morning had now come, Yeshua stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Yeshua. And Yeshua said to them, "Children, have you any food?" They answered him, "No." And he said to him, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some." So they cast, and now they were not able to draw in because of the multitude of fish.
And they answered him, "No, we didn't catch anything." And he said to them, cast the net on the correct side of the boat, on the right side of the boat, and you will find some. So they cast it, and now they were not able to draw it in because of the multitude of fish. This to me says, and I've always took it this way, be careful with the word. Don't cast it the wrong way. Cast it on the right side of the boat, and it will be received. But if we cast it with an aha, or a get even, or I'm going to correct you, agenda, attitude, you're not going to catch any fish. You're throwing it off the wrong side of the boat. If you ought to, you should, your net's been tossed away. But if you use the word the way it's intended, it will catch a lot of fish. After these things, Yeshua showed. And he was showing the fish. Vayidagularov. Find some. So they cast. And they weren't able to bring it in. Luke 5, 4 through 6.
When he had stopped speaking, he said to Simon, launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. But Simon answered and said to him, Master, we have toiled all night and caught nothing. Nevertheless, at your word I will let down the net. And when they had done this, they caught a great number of fish, and their net was breaking.
From now on you will be catching men, he said. That's so good. Oh, I forgot verse 10. I'm sorry. On Luke 5.
And so also were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Yeshua said to Simon, do not be afraid. From now on you will catch men.
From now on you will catch men. All of these things were referring back to the Torah, back to the blessing, back to when this all was set in motion. Basically, Yeshua was saying, guys, we got a job to finish up here that we got to get started on to finish up. And this has been going on now for over 2,000 years. It's still going on. Today, the nets are still being thrown, and the people are still coming in. They're drawn to the order of God. They're drawn to the organizedness of God. Why wouldn't we be? He created us. So we should be drawn to him and his ways. We have to think, where is our heart that he is looking at all the time? Matthew 13:47, he said, again, the kingdom of heaven is like a dragnet cast into the sea and gathering fish of every kind. That's Joseph's coat of many colors, every nation. A reference to the nations. You see, when you start to look at the New Testament, how when you can see the meat in the Torah, how the New Testament starts to have more meaning. So you can start to see. These people had code language in Hebrew. They still do. The letters are numbers. There's gematria. There's all kinds of things in here. We can start to look into things and we start to see things lining up. Where the word starts to interpret the word. Because when man starts interpreting it, it goes into man's religion. Mark 6:41.
When he had taken the 5 loaves and the 2 fish.
Which, by the way, our metaphor for the Torah and the 2 houses of Israel, Ezekiel 37, the 2 sticks. Go ahead.
He looked up to heaven, blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to his disciples to set before them. And the 2 fish he divided among them all.
Just the same as how the house of Israel was divided into the nations. So you see, this fish that is the house of Israel, the fish that's on the back of the cars, on the bumpers. People need to know what they're talking, what it's really representing. That fish, it represents the restoration of the house of Israel. It's a metaphor. This is what gets me. We were given freedom of the mind. He says, consider the ant. What does the ant do? What he said to do. Pack rocks. Dig holes. Store up seed. Ants do it. I don't see one ant out there sitting on the side of the trail going, nah, I don't have to do that anymore. You know? Look at the birds migrating. I was watching a rooster peck himself the other day, and he was working himself over really good, pecking everything off him. I thought, only God could create a creature that could fly, has 2 legs, no hands, but gives him the ability to touch every part of his body with his beak. I thought, God is amazing. He didn't create. I was watching the ducks in the river. And they're flopping around out there and getting a lot of food, and it's freezing cold. There's ice going by them. I mean, these guys are upside down in the water, thrashing around in water this deep, and they're pulling grubs out from under rocks. And they're slick, and they're shiny, and they're fat, and they're beautiful birds. God, only God can create a bird that can float on ice water, that can see under the rocks and get full. He's got a critter for every crack on this planet. I mean, it's just amazing what he has. God does this. The migrations, you know, they had the DOW come out and they did the deer. They catch the deer from helicopters, bring them in, tag them. They do a presentation at Skyute Casino. It's a tag, this tracking collar. And the deer from this area in May, the deer that are in this area in the winter go north in May 1st around that time. And then in fall, they come back. The deer in New Mexico at that same time come up here. And when they go back, the DOW told me they don't go off that trail more than 15 yards that they used to get where they were going. And they do this every year. And God put it in them. And now he's got his people that he's programmed at Mount Sinai, the DNA, that are coming back. One day a little kid picks up a Bible. What is it? But they look at it. And the next day, 10 years later, they're going to a Bible study or a Bible function at a church somewhere. And then the world starts to open up and they start hearing about this Jesus. And they learn about salvation. They learn something that's ancient. And then God puts and brings them someone that says his name was Yeshua, and they learn some more and they go, hey, this is getting interesting. I need to find out more of this stuff. And next thing you know, there they are. Then that got them. So these things are happening, and they've been happening ever since the dispersion, ever since 70 AD. This has been going on. And it's the most beautiful thing to see it with our eyes and to be a part of it. Because then you can see the bigger picture all over, everywhere. It's so beautiful. I just love it. Ezekiel 47:9.
And it shall be that every living thing that moves wherever the rivers go will live. There will be a very great multitude of fish because these waters go there, for they will be healed and everything will live wherever the river goes.
Yeah. This water flows. Fish in the sea, fish in the midst of the earth, God's people to hear his word, to live his way, to be a holy nation to him, to be a set apart people in his ways. The words that are used are cast and catch, not hook, which might be a metaphor to hook someone. But cast the net and catch renders us to look at large multitudes, following the truth, the very essence of God. To be fishers of men, we must be clear of what the word says. We must walk in his truth to the best of our ability and ask for strength to go the extra mile, to work our net successfully. We must grow in the understanding of who God is and what we represent and who we represent. Very important. Genesis 49:1-32. Thank you, Paul.
Yaakov called his sons and said, gather together, that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days. Gather together and hear, you sons of Yaakov, and listen to Israel, your father. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Unstable as water, you shall not excel, because you went up to your father's bed, then you defiled it. He went up to my couch. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Instruments of cruelty are in their dwelling place. Let not my soul enter their council. Let not my honor be united to their assembly. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they hamstrung an ox. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Yaakov and scatter them in Israel. Judah, you are he whom your brothers shall praise. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. And as a lion, who shall rouse him? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh comes. And to him shall be the obedience of the people, binding his donkey to the vine, and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He washed his garments in wine, and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are darker than wine, and his teeth whiter than milk. Zebulun shall dwell by the haven of the sea. He shall become a haven for ships, and his border shall adjoin Sidon. Issachar is a strong donkey, lying down between two burdens. He saw that rest was good, and that the land was pleasant. He bowed his shoulder to bear a burden, and became a band of slaves. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent by the way, a viper by the path, that bites the horse's heels, so that its rider shall fall backward. I have waited for your salvation, O Lord. Gad, a troop shall tramp upon him, but he shall triumph at last. Bread from Asher shall be rich, and he shall yield royal dainties. Naphtali is a deer let loose. He uses beautiful words. Yosef is a fruitful bough by a well. His branches run over the wall. The archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him and hated him. But his bow remains in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. By the God of your father who will help you, and by the Almighty who will bless you with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies beneath, blessings of the breasts and of the womb, the blessings of your father have excelled the blessings of my ancestors up to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Yosef, and on the crown of the head of him who was separate from his brothers. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father spoke to them. And he blessed them. He blessed each one according to his own blessing. Then he charged them and said to them, I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought, with the field of Ephron the Hittite as a possession for a burial place. There they led Abraham and Sarah, his wife. There they buried Yitzhak and Rebekah, his wife, and there I buried Leah. The field and the cave that is there were purchased from the sons of Heth. And when Yaakov had finished commanding his sons, he drew up his feet into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people.
These are very important, these blessings, because one thing I want everyone to notice, if you have your scriptures with you today, if you will look at the blessings of Judah and the blessing over Joseph, are the two largest blessings in these blessings of the 12 tribes. Judah, it is said in verse 10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet. This is right here is why Judah, the Jewish people, have been so persecuted. Because the scepter shall not depart from Judah, the Torah shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, meaning they will walk in the ways of God. To the best of their ability, there will be those in there that will guard the Torah, they will die for the Torah, and they will always know their Shabbats and their Mordim, and they know the ways of God. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet. So Judah was kept in charge of the Torah. And Joseph, Ephraim, is where the believers, the big, massive body of believers that is spread across the country, across the world, the globe, that have not come across the revelation yet, but they are going to come into the Torah, the ways of God. So when they meet up with Judah, they all get completed in both directions. It's so beautiful. And it's right here in their blessings. They're getting blessed, blessed, blessed. Both of these two realms. Which brings us to today, where we're all at. Genesis 50, 1 through 26. The end of Bereshit, the end of the first scroll. Thank you, Paul.
And Yosef fell on his father's face and wept over him and kissed him. And Yosef commanded his servants and the physicians to embalm his father. So the physicians embalmed Israel. 40 days were required for him, for such are the days required for those who are embalmed. And the Egyptians mourned him for 70 days. Now when the days of his mourning were past, Yosef spoke to the household of Pharaoh, saying, If now I have found favor in your eyes, please speak in the hearing of Pharaoh, saying, my father made me swear, saying, behold, I am dying. In my grave which I dug for myself in the land of Canaan, there you shall bury me. Now, therefore, please let me go up and bury my father, and I will come back. And Pharaoh said, go up and bury your father, as he made you swear. So Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him went up all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, and all the elders of the land of Egypt, as well as the house of Joseph, his brothers and his father's house. Only their little ones, their flocks, and their herds they left in the land of Goshen. And there they went up with him, both chariots and horsemen, and it was a very great gathering. Then they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond the Jordan, and they mourned there with a great and very solemn lamentation. He observed 7 days of mourning for his father. And when the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning at the threshing floor of Atad, they said, this is a deep mourning of the Egyptians. Therefore its name was called Abel Mizraim, which is beyond the Jordan. So his sons did for him just as he had commanded them. For his sons carried him to the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah before Mamre, which Abraham bought with the field from Ephron the Hittite as a property for a burial place. And after he had buried his father, Yosef returned to Egypt, he and his brothers, and all who went up with him to bury his father. When Yosef's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, perhaps Joseph will hate us and may actually repay us for all the evil which we did to him. So they sent messengers to Yosef, saying, before your father died, he commanded, saying, thus you shall say to Yosef, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you. Now please, forgive the trespass of the servants of God your father. And Yosef wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, behold, we are your servants. Joseph said to them, do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about, as it is this day, to save many people alive. Now therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. So Yosef dwelt in Mitzrayim, he and his father's household. And Yosef lived 110 years. Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. The children of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were also brought up on Joseph's knees. And Joseph said to his brethren, I am dying, but God will surely visit you and will bring you out of this land to the land of which he swore to Abraham, to Yitzhak, and to Yaakov. And Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt.
And he was put in the coffin in Egypt. At the end of every Torah cycle, they recite Chazak Chazak, Vanit Chazak, which means, and may we be strengthened. Be strong, and may we be strengthened. That's what it means. Be strong, and may we be strengthened. This is what the strength of this parsha, the strength of Bereshit, was in this last bit. When now, therefore, Yosef said, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them, the ones who sold him into slavery. And if we can do that, we've overcome a big obstacle. If we can forgive those who sold us into slavery. And this is what Yosef did. And you know, it's so metaphorical. Joseph was in a kingdom. And Yeshua says, if you don't forgive, you won't be forgiven. Which means, if you don't forgive, we're not going to be in the kingdom. And so that's one of the keys to the kingdom is forgiveness. Humility and forgiveness. And then Yeshua. Daryl, thank you, brother.
The Haftarah for today is 1 Kings chapter 2, verses 1 to 12. Now the days of David drew near that he should die, and he charged Solomon his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and prove yourself a man. And keep the charge of the Lord your God to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgments, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn, and the Lord may fulfill his word, which he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons take heed to their way, to walk before me in truth with all their heart and with all their soul, he said, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. Moreover, you know also what Joab, the son of Zeruiah, did to me, and what he did to the two commanders of the armies of Israel, to Abner, the son of Ner, and Amasa, the son of Jether, whom he killed. And he shed the blood of war in peacetime, and put the blood of war on his belt that was around his waist, and on his sandals that were on his feet. Therefore, do according to your wisdom, and do not let his gray hair go down to the grave in peace. But show kindness to the sons of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and let them be among those who eat at your table. For so they came to me when I fled from Absalom, your brother. And see, you have with you Shimei, the son of Gera, a Benjaminite from Bahurim, who cursed me with a malicious curse in the day when I went to Mahanaim. But he came down to meet me at the Jordan, and I swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with the sword. Now, therefore, do not hold him guiltless, for you are a wise man and know what you ought to do to him, but bring him his gray hair down to the grave with blood. So David rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. The period that David reigned over Israel was 40 years. 7 years he reigned in Hebron, and in Jerusalem he reigned 33 years. Then Solomon sat on the throne of his father David, and his kingdom was firmly established. Just a quick observation in comparison and in contrast to the death of Israel, you see the charge that is given a dying patriarch to his offspring, to his sons. However, with Israel, he is charging his sons and each one is a different charge. But you see here, David is charging his son Solomon because he has given him the throne. Now, on the surface, this Haftarah looks like a scene from The Godfather a little bit. I mean, at least it kind of comes across to me, because he's on his deathbed and he's calling for the blood of two men. But you have to remember, this is not the mob families of Sicily. This is a monarchy, a true monarchy, ruled by a king. It's not like our government where we have a judiciary, legislative branch, and executive branch. David was all of that. He is a king. He is basically charging Solomon with unfinished judicial business left over. So when you read that, don't think David cruel that in his time he's driving a personal vendetta. He is established in his throne by God to do justice among Israel, and this is decreed by God through David. But David is now in his deathbed. He cannot fulfill the long arm of the law. So he hands that over to Solomon to finish. It's clear already that David is aware of Solomon's wisdom in this charge also. He says, you're a wise man. Now, you know, when I think of Solomon, I don't know about you, but when I think of Solomon, I think of kind of a milquetoast, peace-loving, you know, Durango-type guy. You know, he relies heavily on wisdom. So we do not see him the warrior king like his father. We see him as the one always seeking peace. But we mustn't forget that he's being given the charge. He's being given the charge of God through his father David to finish up this judicial business. So there is another side to Solomon. So just to give you a little bit of that. Thank you very much.